From the Forgotten Side of Medicine, Why Medicine Won't Cure You and What's Finally Changing.
Story at a glance, no industry, organization, or cause tasked with solving a problem will actually solve it, because the problem disappearing threatens their economic livelihood or political power, a dynamic visible everywhere from nonprofits which constantly seek donations but never produce results,
to dating apps that deliberately prevent users from finding partners and leaving the platform.
The pharmaceutical industry has perfected this model. Drugs are designed to be taken perpetually rather than cure. Side effects create demand for additional drugs, and the entire regulatory apparatus is structured to protect this status quo by suppressing affordable natural therapies like DMSO that
challenge it.
SRI epitomize this dynamic, massively overprescribed, frequently life-ruining, and nearly impossible to withdraw from yet for decades. The industry successfully kept all criticism of them out of mainstream discourse. Kennedy then announced a multi-agency federal effort to combat inappropriate SRI prescribing, train providers in how to correctly taper patients off antidepressants, and provide non-pharmaceutical alternatives, marking the first time in memory a federal health initiative has aimed to help get patients
off a major drug class rather than on one.
Conversely, those who embrace the constant challenge of actually solving problems rather than managing them in medicine and elsewhere consistently find it is the most fulfilling way to practice, which is why Kennedy's approach of giving physicians a supportive framework to break from the status quo
holds so much promise.
When I was in high school, I observed a few discouraging events which led me to postulate, no industry, organization, or cause tasked with solving a problem will actually solve it because the problem disappearing threatens their economic livelihood or political power.
Since that time, I have observed
more examples than I can count in so many different spheres that I've accepted this dynamic is a common feature of society, and likewise have come across many similar observations by others, my favorite of which was, nothing is so permanent as a temporary government program. Milton Friedman Resen.
TLY, two noteworthy examples of this principle came to my attention.
First, a frustrated patient shared with me they'd recently learned all of the online dating apps had switched from formats which allowed people to find suitable long-term partners, for example, with lengthy compatibility surveys, to ones which prevented people from matching because if someone found a good
match on a platform, they would then stop paying more money for the service, whereas if they were hooked on it and spending hours each day trying to find someone, they would be a sustainable source of revenue.
Recently, efforts to connect SRI to mass shootings shifted the Overton window, making SRI injuries gradually become acceptable to discuss, culminating in Secretary Kennedy recently holding a panel where victims shared devastating testimonies of what SRI had done to their lives. More remarkably, once one company figured out this approach made more money, they bought out all of their competitors, sometimes with threats of spurious lawsuits, and shifted them all over to this predatory model as well, all of which is detailed in these six articles 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. I found this example noteworthy as one of the greatest sources of distress I find in patients, particularly now, are relationship challenges, particularly a lack of one, and I believe much of this traces back to apps taking over courtship.
My belief, in turn, is that many of the heavily contested policies we are seeing, for example reducing social support for the elderly, mass migration, or replacing workers with robots or AI, ultimately are due to the fact policymakers believe the declining birthrate means it will not be viable for the younger generation to support the society, particularly the elderly, so alternatives need to be found regardless of how objectionable they are.
A common cycle predatory industries in America follow is presenting a superior way to meet an essential need of humanity that replaces the traditional one that's worked. Then once the old one is completely displaced, tightening the screws with the new one to milk as much out of the population as possible until things are far worse than what preceded it and massive social cost is accrued. For example, the Rockefellers did this in various ways with food, energy, and medicine. Beyond the personal cost this dynamic creates, one of the largest challenges most developed countries are facing is a low birth rate, which is primarily due to low marriage rates.
Note, because online dating has now become so bad, the companies that monopolized the market are starting to lose a lot of users and money, signaling there may be a chance for this cycle to reset itself.
Prosecutors alleged it paid over $3 million in donor funds to informants embedded in white supremacist groups including the KKK and National Alliance while soliciting donations to end hate, and that one paid informant participated in planning chats, attended, and helped with logistics for
the 2017 Charlottesville Unite the Right rally. Many, in turn, were outraged about this, in part because of how much political capital was extracted from the event, e.g.,
Biden made opposing it a central justification for his 2020 presidential campaign, and Harris to a lesser extent did so as well in 2024, but also because of just how much money IT made. Unfortunately, these are far from isolated examples, and it would be impossible for me to cover even a sliver of them here. Second, a federal DOJ indictment recently charged the SPLC, one of the country's leading civil rights groups that built its reputation fighting hate, with wire fraud, bank fraud, and money laundering. As such, this article will focus on how this principle applies to medicine and why I believe beyond greed, complacency also plays a central role in the continual recurrence of this dynamic across societies. The love of money, in turn, has long been recognized as one of the most powerful forces for twisting human hearts towards evil, which often results in immense destruction to the people or the environment, while simultaneously, its value is often completely arbitrary. Money gets printed and then assumes value because everyone holds a collective faith in it. The ruling class controls us through. The origins of our faith and devotion to money have raised many questions throughout the ages. At the same time, money is a remarkable force for both developing and organizing society, and many of the things we depend upon are only available to us because of the economic system we live within. However, I would argue the core issue is that for many people, effectively accumulating money becomes the foundational axiom guiding principle used to navigate life, causing them to rationalize a variety of unethical positions they often lie about to make money, because their internal algorithm will frequently default to the choice that acquires more money. When the question of money is looked at, it is often seen through a lens of greed being a deadly sin. Recognizing this, in turn, provides an invaluable tool for understanding the world around you, as the motivations of others often become far clearer once you cut through all their rhetoric and view things strictly through what they stand to profit from. In the same way that a default behavior to seek the most profitable choice helps to explain many of the individual actions we observe around us, businesses also follow a relatively predictable set of behaviors aimed at optimizing profit, which you can see in a wide range of industries. In general, most large businesses aim for the following, prioritizing whichever are most feasible: continual growth, high markups on their product, the widest possible market exclusivity to protect and maximize sales, repeating sale,